This is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network, bringing you all Noles all the time.
At Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to the basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting rolled, banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something. I can really do this.
And you're listening to the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network. Bringing you all Noles all the time. I'm Jason Staples, and we got a big show today. We're going to be reviewing a few notes about the Florida State-Miami game after taking a closer look at the replay. And then we're going to have a second segment, our much longer segment, which is going to give you some updates from the recruiting weekend. This weekend was the biggest in-season recruiting weekend of the year, with Florida State having a load of talent from three classes from 2016, 2017, and 2018 on the sidelines and in the stands for that game. A lot of talent on campus, and we're going to have Wayne McGahee III from NoleDigest.com for that segment to give us the full poop. So let's go ahead and go to the first segment where we're talking about a few other things. We did a pretty full evaluation of the Florida State-Miami game after that game. But after watching the replay, there were a few other things that that really stuck out. The first was the play of the offensive line. I think the offensive line... I didn't spend enough time on how good they were in this game in my initial reactions podcast. In particular, I got to say, Kelly at the right tackle position, Derek Kelly has really stabilized that spot. He played extremely well in this game, both in the run game and in the passing game, and has brought some consistency to that position. He moves his feet well, he bends well, and is just a little bit more physically ready than what we saw from Brock Rubel early on. And again, I've said this over and over again, that I think Rubel is an excellent prospect for down the line. He's just not quite ready yet. Well, Derek Kelly has really stabilized that position. And I thought Chad Mavetti, in place of Kareem R at that left guard spot, I spent a lot of time looking at that position in particular. And he played better than I'd realized. He got a little bit better as the game went on, and he was solid. And it was surprising to see how well he moved actually on some screen plays and some things that asked him to move because of how overweight he is and so on. And you wouldn't expect him to be able to move the way he is. You could see why Jimbo Fisher in the preseason and during the offseason was so excited about him as a prospect before he put on some of that bad weight. Where and how good he could have potentially been at that right tackle spot at a lighter weight because of how nimble he is, even at 3.5 bills, which is just too much for him. But he was solid at that spot, and it's a real luxury for Florida State to have that third guard who can step in there when a guy like R is a scratch and is unable to come in and do what he's normally able to do. The guy I actually thought had a little bit rougher game was actually... Was actually 77. I thought, Roderick Johnson is the best offensive lineman in this group. He's the one returning starter. He is a potential high first round draft pick. He's a tremendous prospect. But there were a couple times where the Miami defensive ends on that side got the better of him. He gave up what should have been a sack, and it took a Everett Golson magician's act to keep it from being a sack at one point. It was just because he stopped his feet and bent his waist. And just wasn't fundamental in a couple cases. And there were a couple times where in the run game he was not as clean as what you'd like to see. So this is a good game for him to take a look at the film and make sure that he gets back to some fundamentals on a few things and hopefully cleans some of that stuff up. But I was a little surprised that he had a little bit of trouble. And I thought Ryan Hofeld at the center position, listen, the guy is not going to – he's not going to single block and overpower defensive tackles. And you could see – actually, at all three spots, both guards and the center position, on that fourth down run that Vickers was stuffed on, all three of those guys were stoned at the line of scrimmage. They didn't get pushed there. Wilson Bell didn't get pushed like he needed to. He got stood up. Hofeld got pushed back about a yard, yard and a half, and then Mavetti wasn't quick enough to cut off the angle on the backside there, and that's actually the guy who made the play. So, you know, all three of the guys on the interior kind of got pushed back there, and Hofeld, again, is not a guy that's going to be anchoring and just single blocking those guys, but he was actually very good in this game, I thought. He's brought some stability and consistency to that position. The communication and the ability to combo block and things on the interior was a big deal. And on a couple of Dalvin Cook's big runs, if you look, it's actually Hofeld who's getting to that second level and getting his hands on a linebacker or, you know, a safety, a second level player, to get just enough of him for Cook to be able to accelerate by. And that's a big deal. And you can see some of what Hofeld has, some of the difference that he's made up front. That said, against Louisville this week, Louisville's got a much better defensive front than Miami does, although Miami has comparable athletes for the most part. They don't have a Sheldon Rankins, for sure, but they've got, you know, generally pretty good athletes up front. They've just not been as good, but those guys were focused in this game, and you could see that, and it didn't really matter. Florida State's offensive line was, you know, they were clean. They communicated. It was a solid performance up front. Another thing that stood out to me in this game was Bobo Wilson returning punts. And in my last podcast, my instant reactions, I talked about how I felt like Bobo Wilson was not getting the credit that he deserved. I mean, yes, he's dropped some balls and there's been some things that he's not done well at the wide receiver position. But at the same time, I think that he hasn't gotten the credit that he's deserved at the receiver position as a blocker and as a consistent player for the most part. You know, he's had those drops, but he's made some big plays at that wide receiver position. But I got to say, he scares me to death as a punt returner. And, you know, this is where Florida State, they've had Nyquan Murray starting to take some reps in practice at that position. They had Marquez White at that position in the preseason. And White, by the way, that's another guy I'm going to come back to in a minute. White is a really interesting player at this point. But they had Marquez White at that position. And I really think at some point they've really got to consider making a change there. I would think maybe Nyquan Murray, who reports have as having maybe the best hands on the team at this point. I mean, I don't care if the guy just fair catches every time. There are just too many times where it looks where Wilson is catching punts and it's not clean. And to me, you've just got to have a guy who's consistently going to catch it every time and isn't going to scare you by juggling it or catching it going to his knees or whatever. You've got to have consistency at that punt returner position. That's something to monitor moving forward. And you know, ideally, I think Florida State finds a young guy or someone else who's going to be able to field that stuff more cleanly moving forward. So that is a place where I think there might need to be a change made. And that, again, that's nothing against Bobo Wilson overall. I'm not sure that he's going to be the best option long term at that punt returner position. I think you want to get somebody who's a little bit more reliable catching the football there. Returning to Marquez White, it's been interesting because in this game, you know, again, Florida State has one of the best NFL prospects at the defensive back position in the country with Jalen Ramsey, a guy who I think will be probably one of the best handful of corners, maybe the best corner in the NFL within his first two or three years in the NFL. I think he's got that kind of potential at that cornerback position. But if you look at this team, Marquez White is a completely, I'm really impressed by what I've seen from him as a cornerback. He is so fluid and so solid in coverage. In some ways, I mean, he is more fluid than Jalen Ramsey. And in some respects, he might be actually a little bit more consistent a cover guy at this point. Now Ramsey is going to be more of the big play guy. He's going to be a better option against certain vertical routes because of his length. He's more physical against the run. There's a lot that he brings to the table physically that Marquez White doesn't. But wow, I mean, White is a much better bookend corner than I had expected him to be coming into this year, and he's starting to look like a pretty good NFL prospect at that corner position himself. I'm talking about first two round NFL cornerback prospect. Because he, I mean, Miami avoided him. And for good reason. When you go back and you look at this, his guys weren't open. And they avoided him for a good reason. Because he's very consistent. He was able to take away his guy on the field side. And that's tough to do. It was also more obvious on that second watch what Miami's plan was coming into this game and how they were going with, you know, a 2x2 formation, motioning to a 3x1 to get an advantageous matchup on Tyler Hunter as much as possible. And again, that you can understand that there, and they were trying to get a guy who is in their number 3 or 4 wide receiver spot, but might be their most talented wide receiver in Stacy Coley on Florida State's basically 5th coverage guy, which, you know, you're trying to hide him there a little bit in that spot in the secondary. And you got to tip your hat to what Miami did schematically to create those mismatches. So, you know, that stood out a little bit more on how they were going to that from minute one. I mean, that was their first drive. The big pass play that they had was exactly that. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how Florida State handles teams that try to do that in the future. I mean, obviously, if they have Trey Marshall and a full deck in the secondary, Nate Andrews in the secondary, I'm not sure that teams will have the same ability to make that mismatch. And I'm not sure who else on the schedule has enough talent at the wide receiver position to put Florida State in that kind of mismatch. Maybe Clemson. Maybe they can get Artavis Scott or somebody like that into that same kind of motion, him into that same kind of mismatch. But if you're Florida State, you've got to find ways to make sure that you take that away. And I think Charles Kelly made some really good adjustments late in the game after Stacy Coley actually got hurt. But on those last two drives, you could see that they made a couple adjustments to take some of that away and eliminate that mismatch as much. One other thing that also stood out is, again, is just how Florida State's length affected the game when Miami's trying to run to the edge on the one hand, and then when Brad Kaya was trying to throw up the field, how much Florida State's length and was affecting him and his accuracy and with the batted balls. I mean, they had 5 batted balls from the defensive line, and that makes a big difference for a quarterback. And Kaya is not a short guy. He's 6'4". And he, again, on second watch, really impressed me in this game. I mean, he's a guy that he is a definite NFL prospect at the position. He deserves a lot of credit for the way that he hung in there against a rush that had him on the ground most of the game. And, you know, he made some solid throws throughout, and he's going to be a difficult player to contend with all season. Beyond that, there really isn't a whole lot more that I picked up in terms of things that I didn't cover in the first initial reactions podcast. I thought the Florida State defensive tackles indeed did dominate as it had appeared on the first watch. The linebackers were solid overall. They were very good against the run. You know, gave up some things in the pass, and the wide receivers were pretty solid throughout. And again, Everett Golson is showing the kinds of signs where if he's able to continue to build on this kind of performance, if good Everett Golson continues to emerge here, and a guy who understands what Florida State's asking him to do, this Florida State offense is going to start clicking and looking a lot like what we saw in that first quarter. And that's going to be a dangerous combination with what I think is a pretty good defense. And actually, that's going to be one of the things that we're going to cover in the next podcast, is this question of whether or not the Florida State defense is indeed elite. And that's, again, we'll talk about that a little bit more in depth on that next podcast. But overall, I think, you know, the thing that sticks out in this game about Florida State and about Miami is, again, you saw more effort from Florida State on the defensive side. You saw signs from the offense that this offense is very close to blowing things open. Just some missed opportunities in the red zone and some good play calls outside of the 4th-and-1 to Vickers, which I think was a mistake by Fisher and the staff to try to challenge Miami inside there without R and with the situation that they had in the inside. But overall, I mean, this was a very good performance by Florida State, particularly in the first half, that they just didn't cash in on all the opportunities that they had. Moving forward, this team has a chance to be better than I think a lot of us expected it to be. I mean, we talked on this show about how it had the potential to be a playoff team, but it would take a lot of growth. And I think we might be seeing that kind of growth starting to happen. We'll see whether or not that carries forward against a better team in Louisville this week. But those are my overall takeaways so far. All right, now we're into the second segment of the show where we're going to be joined by Wayne McGahey III from NoleDigest.com, who has been hard at work covering the big recruiting weekend from this last weekend. The Miami game weekend was Florida State's biggest in-season recruiting weekend. So, Wayne, what you got for us on the recruiting front?
Well, first thing I wanted to talk about, have you seen Miami quarterback Brad Kaya's comment about the Florida State defensive line where he called them lazy because they batted his balls down?
Well, you know, I think that's just that's clearly sour grapes for getting his balls batted.
You know, I mean, I'm sure that I would be pretty upset if my balls were batted too.
Yeah, but that's interesting. You know, nothing like getting after people for being lazy for doing exactly what they're coached to do. Especially since two batted balls and a third that was not batted but was redirected by the long arms of Lorenzo Featherston were three of the four final plays on in the last series of downs that Miami had in that game. So they may be lazy, but they were pretty effective. And as I recall, wasn't he on the ground quite a bit in this game?
Yeah, he got hit quite a bit. I was actually very impressed with him because he kept getting up and he actually played better as the game went on. But yeah, your attitude, son, you need to chill. You need to take it back a notch.
Well, you know, this is where at some point you got to have some respect for the guy in that he did take a beating in this game. And I think there is also, I wonder with some of these comments sometimes whether or not sometimes team leaders make these sorts of comments just to make sure that their team is aware of sort of where they stand on this. And boy, Kaya did play well in this game. I mean, he missed some throws. I think actually he started to miss some throws once the rush had gotten to him a little bit more and he was feeling that and made some, had some inaccurate throws, particularly in that intermediate area. But he was still, he was pretty darn good in this game in any case.
Yeah.
So let's go ahead then and get back to the recruiting side of things, where again, this was a very eventful weekend for Florida State. A lot of people, a lot of, talent from the 16, 17, and 18 classes on campus at this game, which was, as the young folks like to say, lit. This was a great atmosphere for a lot of these kids. And actually, the fact that it was a closer game made sure that the atmosphere took center stage. So, in some sense, that's not always a bad thing. So why don't we start with some of the players that it looks like this visit may have had a pretty significant impact on and where they fit in Florida State's plans.
Well, a lot of the out-of-state visitors were making their first trips or second trips to Tallahassee. They haven't been able to get in. So it was a big it was very big for them to come in and see, especially linebacker Dontavius Jackson. Now, Florida State hasn't pulled a kid out of Texas that Texas and Texas A&M have wanted in almost a decade. So I was a little hesitant before I talked to him, but Florida State, especially Coach Tim Brewster, has done a phenomenal job with him. And he actually has a pretty significant tie to Florida State. His uncle, who attended the Florida State game with him, was best friends with two former Florida State players. One of them was Devon Darling, who actually passed away on the Florida State practice field.
Yeah, I was surprised about that he didn't pass away on the Florida State practice field. He passed away in the mat room with me, actually. I was there. I was teammates with Devon and Devard Darling at that time, and this is obviously one of the worst things I've ever had to deal with in my life. But yeah, so I was surprised to hear about that connection as well. But go on. It wasn't on the field, But it was definitely in the line of duty, as they say, and rest in peace, Devon. Anyway.
Yeah, he really enjoyed his visit. He enjoyed the atmosphere. He said it was the best atmosphere that he'd ever seen at a college football game. So Florida State really made an impact there. I think he's not an early enrollee, so I think Florida State has to get him back on campus at least one more time if they want to secure his commitment. But they have definitely put themselves in a good position.
Yeah, and again, this is a kid that, you know, he's a different kind of kid than anybody they brought in a while, not just in terms of the Texas connection, but, you know, you're looking at a 6'2", 235, 240-pound linebacker, more of a downhill, sort of what you would consider a two-down linebacker, fits kind of in the Reggie Northrop role, but with a lot more size. Not as much of a lateral guy, but boy, he brings a lot of physicality to the table. So he's the kind of guy that would definitely be on the radar for what they want to do on downs one and two, particularly against some of the power teams in this conference.
Absolutely. And then next you've got offensive tackle Landon Dickerson. Dickerson is high on the Florida State board. He's the top offensive tackle left on the board, and they're only looking to take one more. So having him come in for the visit, it was big. He came down for the Jimbo Fisher camp in July. He didn't work out. He just came to visit with Coach Trickett. They'd seen enough from him. They didn't need him to work out. He's a mauler, as they'd say. So getting him on campus was big. The atmosphere really stood out to him. He's going to take a visit to Auburn for the Alabama game, which will be a great atmosphere. That's really the team that Florida State's competing against. You've got Virginia Tech in there as well, but it's really Florida State and Auburn
matchup. And, of course, that environment's going to be great, but more than likely that environment could turn into not so great by the second half with the way things are going right now. So, you know, it's always a tricky thing with whether or not success or failure is actually better for winning recruits, because, you know, the one the atmosphere sells itself, and then the other you can market a little bit more early playing time. So it's hard to tell exactly how much that's going to impact these guys. But in any case, he seemed to really the visit seemed to have some impact on him. So who's next on the list?
I'm actually going to go with Malik Henry. He's committed to Florida State, but, you know, he was in the state of Florida, moved back to California. There were questions about would he stick. Is Florida State still recruiting him? Florida State is definitely still recruiting him. He is their number one quarterback on the board. They love the kid. And he, you know, the visits on Saturday really firmed up his commitment. As of right now, he is on track to be an early enrollee. Obviously that could change. We still have about 2 months until that time, but everything that I've heard on his end, it was just great from the visit. So that's a big plus for him, getting him in early as well as firming up that commitment, because he is one of the most talented quarterbacks in this class.
Well, not just one of the most talented quarterbacks in this class. He's a guy that the Florida State staff believes is the most talented quarterback, not just physically, but more in terms of playing the position and having instincts for the position and, you know, natural anticipation and such, that he's the most talented kid they've recruited since, what was the last guy who wore number 5 at the quarterback position?
I didn't know Reggie Northrup played quarterback.
The guy in Tampa, what's his name? Jameis Winston, that guy. They think he's the best prospect at the position that they've looked at since Jameis Winston. And, you know, that's despite signing DeAndre Francois from last year. And Francois is a terrific prospect. Anybody who's seen him throw the football and watched him grow as he grew as a prospect knows that he's a tremendous prospect. But Henry may be actually a better prospect than Francois, and that's where getting him on campus as an early enrollee, I think, makes a huge, huge difference. Because there's next season, this offense at Florida State, the 2016 offense will be whoever starts at quarterback is getting handed the keys to the Ferrari. You know, this is dad tossing the keys to the 16-year-old and going, all right, now don't wreck it. And all you got to do is just, you know, don't put it into the ditch somewhere. And whoever takes over at quarterback is just going to need to know the offense well enough and manage things well enough to not put things into the ditch. And I don't think you can do that coming straight out of high school without a spring. So if he's going to be in contention to start in 2016, which is a possibility if he's an early enrollee, he's going to need to early enroll. Otherwise, absolutely, I think it's DeAndre Francois is the most likely early starter. And then, of course, you have Francois with a year under his belt by the time Henry's actually competing for the job. And then you've got some interesting dynamics there. But if he early enrolls, then I think he and Francois, and of course Sean McGuire, you know, who's waited his turn, are going to be really competing for that job. But I would bet on one of the young kids to start, because you know that you've got so much experience around them that you can handle a couple mistakes here and there from a young guy. Again, similar to the 2013 offense that Jameis Winston took over, where it was just there were no weaknesses on that offense. The whole offensive line was returning. You had three wide receivers returning. You had two running backs returning, a fullback. You know, you had an excellent tight end returning. You had everything in place, and they're going to have that again in 2016. So that's where the early enrollee thing is probably the most important thing to hear and to monitor on the Henry side. Now, that said, Felipe Franks, we've heard that Felipe Franks, there is still mutual interest between him and Florida State. The real question, though, is whether I'll go ahead and let you explain further what we've heard on this.
Florida State does have interest in Franks. They like the way he's come along as a prospect. They've always been interested in him. They've been talking together, and he attended the Florida State Miami game. The issue with that
is Henry, of course.
Yes. The issue with that is, I don't know that Florida State would take two quarterbacks this cycle. And if they did, they would only do it with Henry's permission. They would not force Henry out for Franks.
Right. There's no question that that's going to happen. And the question is whether Henry would be willing to bring another guy in that he'd have to compete with. I wouldn't be surprised at this point if they did bring two in part because of just looking at the numbers. Let's say, for the sake of argument, and again, this is just speculation, let's say that at the end of the spring in 2016, there's a transfer or two out of the quarterback position, out of the current roster, because it doesn't look like J.J. Cosentino is ultimately going to win that job. And let's say, you know, for the sake of argument, again, we don't know what's going to happen here. This is just outright speculation, but let's say that two quarterbacks transfer out because the handwriting's on the wall or whatever, and you're in a similar situation as when Trickett and Coker transferred out. Florida State doesn't want to get into that numbers situation again, where they have to rely on an Everett Golson falling into their lap. So that's where, you know, again, having a guy, and then, you know, you may want to bring in a Franks, who is a better prospect as a number two guy than Sean McGuire was. I mean, I think coming out, he's much, much more similar as a prospect to what Coker was coming out of Alabama.
Franks might be a better prospect now than McGuire is after 4 years.
Yeah, that's probably true. I mean, Franks is an inconsistent thrower, but I think he's actually pretty comparable as a prospect to what you saw with Jake Coker coming out. A little bit more experience throwing the football than Coker, but similar tool set.
Yeah. Franks is great. When Franks is on, Franks is phenomenal. But when Franks is off, it's bad.
Right. Well, I mean, he's kind of like the long driver in golf, right? He can hit the ball a mile, but if the swing's off just a little bit, it's off, you know, it's off in the trees. And, you know, he's got that big arm, can really spin it. And so when he's on, he's hitting it 345 yards down the center of the fairway, and he's hitting wedges into par fives and that sort of thing. But, you know, when he's off, he's in the trees. So that's really where he's at. But that stuff can be cleaned up with a little bit more technique, more fundamental stuff. But, you know, this is where I don't know that Florida State takes a kid. You know, you and I have talked about this. We don't think Florida State takes a kid necessarily in the 2017 class. But if they lose with the loss of DeAndre Johnson, if they lose another transfer or two between now and then, they're actually a little short on numbers at the quarterback position, and it's probably a good idea to try to bring a second one in.
What I was told was that the Florida State's staff does – the only quarterback that they like in the 2017 class just committed to Alabama.
Right.
And
right.
He's pretty firm. So
right. They're not getting him.
Yeah, no, they're not getting him. So that's why Franks is coming back full circle. But they once again, they would only take him if it would not force Henry out.
Right. Henry is their guy.
Yes.
But that said, I think they're going to try to really kind of push to see whether or not they can bring a second guy in just because they're going to need the depth, because in this environment, Jimbo has talked about this recently, that you have to start preparing for kids to transfer. And I think that's why this has come full circle with Franks, and I think they will really try to push to see if they can do that. And you know, that's going to depend on how good the relationship with Henry is. Depends a little bit on whether he early enrolls. I mean, if he early enrolls, then they can basically sell the idea that, listen, Franks is going to be a class behind you anyway, because he's going to redshirt. Let's take this realistically. Here's where we stand. That you can potentially sell this kid on, and you know, we're not bringing a kid in to compete with you, but we've got to have insurance in case somebody gets hurt, in case somebody transfers, etc. And a kid and his dad may buy that. But in any case, that's a lot of time spent on a kid that may or may not be in Florida State's class. But it is interesting right now, because that is a marquee position, and I do think it probably is something that the staff is paying a little bit more attention to right now.
Yep.
So the next one on the list.
Moving on, we need to talk about the talent that was on the sideline at the defensive end position.
My goodness.
the top four targets on Florida State's board overall, regardless of commitment, were in town.
Yep.
In Antonius Clayton, Brian Burns, Janarius Robinson, Wole Batiku, kid, five-star kid from California.
Love. Oh man,
yeah, he's a
that
good prospect,
kid. That kid as a prospect is. I mean, you're talking about a potential early first round pick as an edge rusher. I mean, he's raw, but boy, he's got some. He oozes what you want to see as a prospect. Anyway,
and then you have the 2017 defensive end Malik Herring, who was probably one of the ones influenced most by this Florida State visit. He just fell in love. So Florida State feels very good about their chances with him. But we need to talk about, you know, getting another defensive end to go with Janarius in this class. And it's going to come down to Burns, Clayton, or Batiku.
I think it's probably going to be Burns, which I'm guessing that's what you're about to say.
Yes, I don't think it's going to be Batiku, and I don't think Florida State lands Clayton. Burns still favors Georgia even after the visit, but he's going to be back for more visits. I mean, he didn't take an official this weekend. It's Florida State, it definitely in his head now.
And
I think
putting
Florida
on the press,
State's starting
yes.
to turn the tide there.
Yeah, so you know, some of the people that you know have been in the know on this have been saying that they think Burns ultimately ends up in the class. In any case, I think that they would be if they could land two more of those three prospects, they absolutely do.
They would take them. I just don't think that they get them.
Right. I mean, the interesting one to me is Wole Batiku, who is committed right now to UCLA, and I'm not sure that he's going to go anywhere else. But he's open enough to official to Florida State and official to Notre Dame and official around the country. And initially, I'd be really skeptical of a kid from Junipero Sierra High School in Gardena, California. You know, you say, well, you know, okay, yeah, kid from California gets a nice, you know, official visit, gets to fly across the country and be a part of a big atmosphere. That's really nice, but Florida State has no chance. But this is not a normal California kid. I mean, he's been out there for a year. He lived last year.
Nigeria has a great relationship with Abdul Bello,
yeah.
who were actually found at the same football camp in Nigeria. So
yeah, he's friends with Abdul Bello, and Bello is the one who convinced him to come and give it a look. And it sounded to me like, you know, the kid, first of all, is a very impressive interview. Sounded to me like he has his head on straight. but that he was also pretty impressed by what he saw. And, it, you know, it's a food for thought situation. So at least Florida State now has a puncher's chance with him. And again, this is a kid who's not from California. It's not like, oh, well, you know, you're going to have him traveling across the country. This is a kid from the other side of the world already. And he lived in Maryland last year. He's in California this year. I don't think location matters for him. The question is really whether Florida State's going to be able to flip him from a place like UCLA, where you already have a good staff, you have a good program, and a few other. I mean, he's got an offer list from the top programs in the country. And really, you know, realistically, even if you just said, okay, well, we were going to give him all even odds, it's a 20% chance out of the places that he's official visiting. So unlikely that they get him. But still interesting, particularly with having Bello on the roster and sort of continuing to be in his ear, because he and Bello talk frequently. Who knows what that does? But in any case, Florida State will take they'll take two of those three.
Absolutely.
Question is if they can get, I mean, worst case scenario, they get none of those three, which is very possible as well.
At that point, I mean, you're looking at it's getting one is up in the air at this point. Getting two is
unlikely.
Extremely unlikely. So,
but you know, again, they're rolling the dice for some of the top edge prospects in the country.
Yes.
And this is also where Josh Sweat being on the field as a true freshman and performing the way that he is, that's something that these guys are also noticing. So,
yes.
You know, that's not hurting. All right, move on. Let's move on to the next couple names on the list, and then we'll wrap shortly after that.
All right. Well, you got Nate Craig, wide receiver Nate Craig. Florida State had been slipping with him for a while, got him back on campus. Seems like they're going to get him back on campus again for the Louisville game. Getting him on campus as much as possible is going to be a very big deal, because this guy, he's an in-the-moment type of kid. If he really enjoys a visit, he's leaning that way. So Florida State hadn't been able to get him on campus, you know, throughout the first couple games of the season.
Yeah, and that Florida-Tennessee game had been really influential on him. And the fact that this atmosphere was able to kind of match that atmosphere was a big deal.
Yes. So you have him. He's coming back. And then we'll switch to the 2017 class, where a lot of progress was made here, probably more so than with the 2016 class, which is almost wrapped up. You have guys like Malik Gray, who is going to be making a decision pretty soon.
Yeah, he's going to Florida State.
And he's coming to Florida State. I firmly believe that.
That's a top 10 recruit in the country at the defensive back position. Top 10 overall recruit in the country, in my opinion, as a defensive back. And he's going to be one of the cornerstone recruits in that class, without a doubt.
Yeah, he's deciding between Florida State and USC. That's Southern Cal. And after what's going on out there, it's probably going to be a pretty easy choice, because they don't even know who their coaching staff is going to be at this point. Moving on, you have Jaden Hunter.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, by the way, because there are a couple players in the 2016 class that USC has in their commit list or had been competing with Florida State for, that that Florida State may be giving a couple extra calls to. It'll be interesting. You know, I've seen at least one name has come across my come to my attention on this, and it'll be interesting to see what happens with that. You know, with the Sarkisian termination there, whether that actually has any impact on Florida State, because it may. Anyway, you heard it here first. Anyway, go ahead.
You've got, you know, Jaden Hunter, Tyler Hunter's little brother, has offers from every school in the South. Very physical, 6'3", 220.
Yeah, better prospect than his brother.
Better prospect than his brother after his back injury.
Right. That, in fairness, yes.
Yes, because Tyler Hunter... I fully believe this. Tyler Hunter was a top five player in the country before he hurt his back.
I don't know about top five player
the
in the country.
Kid lighted up.
He was not a top. I don't think he was a top five player in the country, but I think he was a top 100 player. And since then, he's not been the same player. He's a lot stiffer.
Yeah.
And that, you know, you don't see the same level of dynamism, of dynamic bend and things that you did when he first got to Florida State, which is really, it's a shame, because I mean he's got good instincts and, you know, and all that, but you could just see he's kind of like one of those NBA players sort of in the twilight of his career, where he's used to being able to do certain things and the body's just not, it just won't let him do some of those things anymore, and that's sad to see. But anyway, Jaden Hunter is a terrific prospect in that 2017
yes, he is.
Class.
Considering Alabama, Florida State, and Georgia, talked to him today. He really likes seeing Hunter on the back of his jersey at Florida State. That's something that that makes, you know, really stood out to him. He really enjoyed the atmosphere. He's another guy that I wouldn't be shocked, but I would be a little surprised if he ended up anywhere but Florida State. Then you've got
and the other thing is, in addition to being a really good prospect, he is a perfect fit for Florida State at that linebacker position. You know, sort of similar to a Terrence Smith type prospect there with that length and size combination. I mean, he fits exactly what they want to do.
Absolutely. He would go great with Vandarius Cohen, who's already committed.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that kid. He's a diehard Florida State fan. He's talking about taking the trip to LSU this weekend specifically to go watch Florida lose. So he's my kind of prospect.
Yes, he is.
But you've got, you know, he talked about Malik Herring. Malik Herring, Jaden Hunter, and Jamias Williams, two of the three have told me that all three of them have been talking about going to the same school. And Florida State leads for
all of them.
Leads for Hunter and Herring. And I haven't talked to Williams, but Florida State led for Williams coming out of the July camp. And I don't think that's changed at this point.
Well, all I got to say is when I saw Jamias Williams in one of the recruit predictions pieces, you know, this was some free content over on the 247 stuff that that Newberg collected, where, you know, and we did the same thing at Noel Digest, and it was a little bit of a different group that we were all able to get a hold of. But when Jamias Williams said we win about Florida State, that, you know, in his prediction against Miami, he said we win, and then I remember the score prediction that he had. When he had we FSU win, that's something I always pay attention to. When we're talking about recruits, and you know what might be tipping their hand or whatever, when they start using we language, that's a bigger indicator than a lot of things that you might see otherwise. I think that's something to pay attention to. So I think Florida State still leads for him.
Yep, and then just going on, there's a couple of 2018 kids that I wanted to highlight. You have Joey Gatewood, who, you know, it's big time Florida State fan. Auburn's, you know, in his ear because they show him a lot of love, but that kid's coming to Florida State, big time prospect. You also had a 4-star offensive tackle, Jamari Salyer, and just regardless of class, he might have been the best offensive line prospect I saw at the Jimbo Fisher camp this summer. He was phenomenal. Very good from up there in, not North Georgia, but mid to North Georgia, came down for the visit. He was here. So that was good getting him back on campus again. He really loved Trickett the first time. And he loved Trickett again. So,
yeah. And it's been amazing to see. I mean, even this week on the free board at Noel Digest and some of the people through Twitter criticizing Rick Trickett still, as though, you know, he can't recruit or he isn't a good offensive line coach. Just stop.
Yeah, I mean,
kids.
I don't know what else he can do. I dug up an article when I was doing some research for, you know, trying to figure out how much coaching experience this staff has, which is incredible, by the way. They have a combined 251 years of coaching experience.
Yeah,
that's kind of a lot.
Yeah.
So, but they were talking about how Florida State would never win a national championship with Rick Trickett as the offensive line coach.
Yeah, that was an article from early in 2013. That's about as ill-timed as as Heather Dinich's Florida State has hit their ceiling after the 2012 Orange Bowl win over NIU. You know, this is it,
which
Seminole
you
fans.
Which you should hear Jimbo Fisher talk about. Cracks me up every time.
So I actually haven't heard him talk about the Dinich article. So he brings that up. That's one he's never brought up with me.
he brought it up. We got to talk to him, you know, off the air, and he brought it up, or it was brought up to him, and he just laughed and, you know, shook his head and, you know, made a mumbled comment under his breath, and that was the end of it.
Yeah, well, that's Jimbo, but yeah, I mean, that you talk about an ill-timed thing. I mean, that one and the Dinich one are running neck and neck. I got to still give it to Dinich. Partly because of the outlet, you know, when ESPN.com is proclaiming that Florida State has hit its ceiling,
yeah,
after winning an Orange Bowl and you know, over a MAC team and so on. Wow. Yeah. And to do that before arguably the most dominant team, along with 2001 Miami and 95 Nebraska of the modern era, mistimed, I think. It would be ill-timed. Those articles didn't quite hit their mark. They were mistaken. But again, you know, that's the business of making predictions in this business, and got
to
be careful.
One more prospect that I wanted to talk about.
All right,
quick before we switch to the guys who didn't make it.
Yep.
And that was 2018 running back Damian Pierce, who came over. He's at Bainbridge, and I got to see this kid at the MVP camp in Valdosta back in February, and we were sitting there watching him and thought he was a rising senior, thought he was going to be I thought he was an ACC level prospect just watching him. We sit there and asked him, and he said, "No, I'm a freshman," and about fell over. He's about 5'10", 5'11", 210 pounds, and can really tote the rock. Also have really great hands. So he came over, was on the visit, got to talk to Coach Graham a little bit, and I mean, he's been dominant this year. He's got 1,044 yards and 19 touchdowns in 7 games so far this season, so he's going to be one to watch. And I'm almost 100% positive he's going to end up with a Florida State offer.
Interesting. Well, that's one more. Let's go ahead and wrap with the players who didn't make it, and we'll finish with that.
Well, you got to start with Keith Gavin.
Pretty good group, unfortunately.
Yeah, you got to start with Keith Gavin. Lives, you know, 30 minutes away. Didn't make it over despite free tickets to the game. Go on the sideline and all that. Did not make it. And
that is a bad sign. That is what one would call a bad sign in recruiting everybody.
After decommitting from Florida State and having, you know, Nick Saban in his, you know, in his ear the whole time, the Saban effect really taken effect, and it's tough to see him coming back full circle and ending up in the Florida State class.
Sounds like Alabama did not want him to visit, so he didn't.
Yeah. You also have 5-star defensive tackle Shavar Manuel. I was told this one was not his fault. He couldn't find a ride up. So, I mean, he may come later, but not getting him in for this type of environment.
Yeah, that was a big deal.
Is a big deal. Florida State needed to get him on campus as much as possible, and him not showing up really hurts their chances.
Yeah. So any others on that list? I mean, those are the
Trayvon
two biggest.
Trayvon Mullen and Stanford Samuels weren't there.
Yeah,
but
those weren't a big deal.
Yeah, that's not a big deal. They came for the Texas State game.
Obviously not the same kind of environment, but I think Florida State is going to land most likely Stanford Samuels III unless they do something complete. I mean, they'd have to really mess that up or just decide to pass on him, which I don't think is going to happen either way. That kid's a great prospect. His dad has obviously ties to the program, and it was between Florida State and Georgia. I think that kid winds up at Florida State either way. And I think Mullen at this point is probably in the Florida State class as well, regardless. So
they'll probably come up within the next couple weeks, but they've been.
I understand it was they were exhausted from a prior game, and they just decided not to make what is a long trip from where those guys are. So
absolutely,
it's understandable. In any case, let's go ahead and wrap it there. This will do it for us. We're going to have plenty more to talk about over the rest of the week, but that's it for tonight. Now, before we get out of here, just a reminder, you can follow me on Twitter at Doc Staples. You can follow Trey McGahee at Wayne McGahee III on Twitter, and then Seminole Sports Radio at Seminoles Radio for the latest on FSU sports. Of course, check in. Make sure to check in on some of the other updates that are going to come in. Wayne has some good stuff coming up, some interviews with Jamias Williams and Josh Ball and some other people who were on this visit. We didn't even get to Josh Ball, who's the top tackle in this class for Florida State in our show. But that content's going to be up at Noll Digest a little bit later this week. Make sure to catch our podcasts over the rest of the week. We're going to have our Louisville preview soon. In any case, on behalf of Trey McGahee, Wayne McGahee III, I'm Jason Staples. This has been the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio of Esporto Channel. Thanks for listening. I made this.